Adam Aircraft announces 300 layoffs. A 777 suffers major damage when it lands short of a runway at London Heathrow. And three naval airmen are lost in a helicopter crash. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this Aerocast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, January 18th, 2008. ANN has confirmed that Adam Aircraft has cut about 300 workers from its staff of 800 in what the company says is a move to conserve existing funds, focus on certification of its A700 very light jet, and obtain capital to see that program through to its FAA type certificate. Adam Aircraft President Duncan Corbel stressed in a Thursday press briefing that it's crucial to MPF, Adam's Make Production Fly initiative, to strategically manage expenditures to ensure adequate time to secure financing for the long term. Quote, "We're off to a good start in this effort with assistance from our partner Citibank, but we need to be able to provide them with sufficient time working with potential investors to secure long-term financing," unquote. The strategic adjustment suspends operations at the company's Ogden, Utah facility through early summer and delays completion of the composite layup portion of that Ogden facility. Layup and bonding operations for the empennage will be transferred from Adams Pueblo facility to Englewood. Machine shop operations will continue at Pueblo, but all other activity will be suspended. The company will retain MPF staff to make sure it's ready for full-rate production of Adams A500 piston twin this summer, and the A700 in the future. Thankfully, only minor injuries are reported following a Friday morning accident at London Heathrow Airport, in which a Boeing 777 landed short of the airport's south runway. BBC reports the British Airways plane touched down several hundred meters short of the runway. At least one of the aircraft's main landing gear legs were shorn off, and the airliner's port wing and engine nacelle severely damaged. Citing an unidentified airport worker, BBC reports the pilot told authorities the aircraft's electronics failed. It's not clear what the nature of that failure was or what role it may have played in the accident. All 136 passengers and 16 crew members on board Flight 38, which was inbound from Beijing, were hurriedly evacuated from the stricken airliner by emergency slides. At least 17 people were transported to area hospitals with minor injuries. One passenger on board the flight told the UK Press Association the plane's flight crew struggled to bring the aircraft safely over surrounding homes. A witness on the ground said of the pilot, quote, "I think he did a great job," unquote. The Navy says three members of a helicopter crew are dead, a fourth in critical condition, after their MH-53 Sea Dragon hit the ground and exploded in flames about 8 p.m. Wednesday night near Corpus Christi, Texas. The Corpus Christi Caller Times reports that the Navy confirms the accident occurred during a training mission, at night, in heavy fog, next to a 1,000-foot guide broadcast tower. The Navy would not say whether the Hilo is thought to have collided with the tower or its guy wires. Ed Mackley, with the Naval Mine and Anti-Submarine Warfare Command, is quoted by CNN as confirming that the fire started after impact. The dead were not immediately identified. Mackley says a military investigation will be conducted. Midwest Airlines announced on Wednesday it will cut 380 jobs from its regional subsidiary, Skyway Airlines, through outsourcing. The Associated Press reports SkyWest Airlines will take over all Midwest Connect regional operations in March and April. Positions to be eliminated at Skyway include pilots, flight attendants, mechanics, and dispatchers. Cost savings are said to be the driver for the move, but Skyway was the fastest-growing Midwest holding, measured by passengers and revenue. The airline also posted a significant bump in earnings last year. Midwest Airlines spokesman Mike Brophy told the AP it remains unclear how many flights will retain the Midwest Connect name and how many will be sold as SkyWest flights. Up next on ANN, Sebring opens with the debut of a new model from Flight Design. Cirrus announces it's taking orders for its Lightsport SRS. And Cessna reveals how Skycatchers will get from Shenyang to U.S. customers. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-400-7000. for Cessna.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for January 18th, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. The U.S. Sport Aviation Expo opened Thursday in Sebring, Florida, and there are now over 70 distinct models available to light sport aircraft buyers in the U.S. The manufacturer, which until now has held the sales lead in the segment, Flight Design, picked Sebring to unveil its new CTLS model, which features several improvements over the CTSW. A longer fuselage brings lower drag, better aesthetics, and more interior space. ANN's Rob Finfrock, who has followed the company closely and taken training in the CTSW, says the company also listened to flight schools that wanted better damping of the main landing gear.
The landing gear is no longer a straight aluminum rod. It is now a laminate composite structure that is much more forgiving. Plus, it is a somewhat longer aircraft. It increases the length of the moment, and that is going to inherently smooth out most landing approaches.
You can hear Rob's complete report on Sebring in today's Aero News special feature. Also at Sebring on Thursday, Cirrus announced the company is now taking orders for its sporty SRS light sport aircraft. For a deposit of $5,000, you can hold a spot in line until delivery start in 2009. Dale Klapmeyer, who's vice chairman and co-founder of Cirrus, told us, quote, "The response to the SRS has been simply amazing. EAA Air Venture confirmed for us that the SRS has its own place in the Cirrus line. With aircraft like the SRS, the industry has a wonderful opportunity to open aviation to a whole new segment of people. We need to grow this industry," unquote. Instead of starting with a clean sheet, Cirrus will adopt and adapt the German-built FK Polaris. Once it incorporates planned changes to achieve LSA compliance, the plane is expected to exude a strong Cirrus identity. In addition to an expected glass panel, the SRS will include the Cirrus airframe parachute system. Cessna had two bits of news at Sebring regarding the 162 Skycatcher, its upcoming 2009 entry into the light sport category. The company announced it's preparing for the first flight of the Skycatcher. Cessna's engineering team in Wichita, Kansas, is building three airframes, having completed what the company calls nearly 1 year of extensive flight evaluations and design modifications. The company says the 162 first flew with its 100-horsepower Continental 0200 engine on August 17th last year. In recent testing, Cessna engineers have evaluated engine cooling and overall flight characteristics. The company says its goal is a plane that is fun but forgiving, suiting the training and sport flying market for which the Skycatcher is intended. The company also announced more details of its plan for getting Skycatchers to dealers in the U.S. from China, where it will be built by Shenyang Aircraft Corporation. Cessna will ship the Skycatcher's engine and avionics along with raw materials from the U.S. to Shenyang for assembly by SAC under Cessna's supervision. Skycatchers will be test flown, disassembled, and shipped to three Cessna-authorized service stations in the U.S. Those are in West Columbia, South Carolina, Wichita, Kansas, and North Las Vegas, Nevada. Those three facilities will reassemble the aircraft and conduct acceptance test flights before Cessna sales reps distribute the aircraft to retail customers. A Delta Airlines merger with Northwest Airlines could encounter problems, but Air France-KLM says money need not be one of them. In a Thursday report, the Wall Street Journal cited unnamed sources familiar with the deal as saying Air France-KLM, which partners with both Delta and Northwest in the SkyTeam Alliance, stands ready to offer strategic or financial backing for a merger between the two. The journal says the European carrier could offer cash, something that's in short supply at U.S. airlines, in return for a significant stake in the new combined U.S. carrier. The offer could make Northwest a much more attractive merger proposition for Delta than United Airlines parent UAL Corp, the other candidate reported under consideration. While Air France-KLM could not own more than 25% of the consolidated company under U.S. law, the stake could greatly improve the European airlines' access to U.S. markets. The report suggests Air France-KLM, like Northwest, sees some urgency in controlling its own destiny in what analysts say is a coming wave of industry consolidation. Or, as Northwest President and CEO Doug Steenland put it to the New York Times last week when the merger rumors hit the news, quote, "If we want to react to what others do, we could be left with options that are undesirable or with no options at all," unquote. Still ahead, a New Jersey town condemns a legendary family airport. Eads reports a milestone for the Eurofighter. And has the Controllers Union finally jumped the shark? You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design, maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, January 18, 2008. I'm Paul Platt. There was bad news Wednesday for a family fighting to save its private airport from condemnation by a New Jersey town. Solberg Airport has deep aviation roots. In 1935, Thor Solberg completed the first flight from the U.S. to his native Norway. 4 years later, he opened Solberg Airport in Reddington, New Jersey. He raised his kids there and put them through Reddington schools. His son, Thor Jr., went on to Princeton and became a 777 captain for United. Since Thor Sr. died in 1967, Thor Jr. has run the airport and the FBO. In the intervening years, he's been joined in the family business by his sisters, Lorraine Solberg and Susie Solberg-Nagel. The airport hosts a variety of community events each year and had peacefully coexisted with the town for decades. But in the mid-1990s, the Reddington Township Board voted to site a new school in a legally mandated runway safety zone, and the political clouds began gathering. When the Solbergs attempted to draft a new master plan calling for airport improvements, the storm hit. Former Mayor Julia Allen set about to condemn the airport, an initiative which the town is still pushing today. As is often the case in NIMBY battles, protesters have frightened nearby residents with wildly exaggerated tactics. In the case of the Solberg Airport, picketers carried signs which said, "Stop the 747s," implying that runway improvements would lead to jumbo jets flying in and out of the small rural community. The town did ultimately condemn 624 of the airport's 726 acres in 2006 and seized development rights to the remainder, saying it wants to preserve the land as a green space. The Solbergs countered that if that was the real goal of the politicians, leaving the airport as is would provide a green space at no taxpayer expense, and in fact continue the airport's contribution to the town's tax base. The family challenged the condemnation, but on Wednesday, Superior Court Judge Yolanda Ciccone ruled that the Solbergs had not adequately proven their case that the town was taking the land just to prevent airport expansion. The judge ordered an appraisal process to start, with a report to be delivered by May 19th. The Solbergs and their attorney, Lawrence Orloff, told the Star-Ledger newspaper they had not yet had time to study the ruling. They'll have until early March to file an appeal. EADS announced this week that the first Tranche 2 Eurofighter Typhoon has made its first flight at EADS Military Air System site in Manching. Instrumented production aircraft number 7 was piloted by EADS test pilot Chris Warning. The German single-seat variant of the plane represents the full Tranche 2 build standard. It's essentially a Tranche 1 standard aircraft, but utilizes the full Tranche 2 mission computer suite and avionics. The first series of EJ-200 engine flight testing for Tranche 2 was successfully concluded at the end of November in Italy. New capabilities include new mission computers with higher processing and memory capacity, allowing integration of future weapons such as Meteor, Storm Shadow, and Taurus. The Eurofighter Consortium will deliver 251 Tranche 2 weapon systems to the United Kingdom, Germany, Italy, and Spain. The FAA says the U.S. aviation community has significantly improved safety at U.S. airports, but says recent close calls at some of the nation's busiest airports show further action is needed. Acting FAA Administrator Bobby Sturgill led more than 40 aviation leaders to agreement in August on an ambitious plan focused on improved cockpit procedures, airport signage and markings, air traffic procedures, and technology. On Wednesday, the FAA released a progress report on the group's short-term goals, which were heavy on finding ways to reduce runway incursions. Among the highlights, the agency reports 53 of the 75 targeted medium and large airports have completed painting airport markings, and 22 more have committed to complete the upgrade by June 30th. Among small airports, 308 are at some stage in voluntarily adopting the enhanced markings. The FAA told airlines it wanted pilots provided with simulator or other training, incorporating realistic scenarios from pushback through taxi, and to review cockpit procedures to fight pilot distraction during taxi. Of the 112 active air carriers, all have reported that they are in compliance. The agency sought mandatory recurrent training for non-pilot employees of carriers which operate aircraft or vehicles on the airfield. The FAA reviewed existing videos, posted a notice containing visual depictions at faasafety.gov, and is developing a new DVD to be distributed to air carriers for their use in training programs. Acting Administrator Sturgill met with CEOs of U.S. commercial carriers to reinforce the need for improved pilot training and cockpit procedure, citing concern over recent high-visibility runway safety events. Sturgill called for meetings with all carriers and top FAA safety officials to take place by Friday, January 25th. The meetings will include each airline's director of operations, director of safety, and chief pilot, and will examine ways to enhance situational awareness on the runway. You'll find much more detail on this story and the specific issues addressed by the initiative in the print version of this story on our website at aero-news.net. Finally, has the National Air Traffic Controllers Association finally taken hyperbole too far? NATCA declared a staffing emergency at busy facilities in Atlanta, New York, Chicago, and California this month. At a union press conference Thursday at Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, NATCA Regional VP Daryl Meacham told reporters that 23 of the 65 controllers there are eligible to retire right now, and that number will reach 32 by year's end. He said this staffing emergency means up to half of the flights landing at DFW might have to be cut if the FAA didn't negotiate better starting pay for recruits. This final hyperbole appears to have pushed the mainstream press over the edge. The Fort Worth Star-Telegram went to the FAA to find out more. The FAA said, yes, 32 controllers will be eligible to retire this year, but only 13 actually will, and 13 transfers and 33 new trainees from Oklahoma City are on their way. And the FAA pointed out, controllers at Dallas-Fort Worth TRACON are earning annual salaries ranging from $140,000 to $160,000. The union tells the paper that between half and three-quarters of its members at the facility are working overtime. The FAA says, yes, that's true, and that overtime pay is on top of the aforementioned salaries. One question the paper apparently didn't ask the union: if controllers are really tripping over each other heading for the retirement door as soon as they reach eligibility, why have 23 guys at the Dallas TRACON, already eligible for retirement, stuck around? That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, we'll hear from ANN Managing Editor Rob Finfrock at the U.S. Sport Aviation Expo in Sebring, Florida. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and our website, aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plagg. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend. Have a clear and unlimited day.